Welcome, this is William Evans. We're Shifting Gears. This is the third in a series of programs. We're in conversation with Theo Colburn of Paonia, Colorado, about the effects of oil and gas extraction. Welcome, Theo.
Hi, Will. Good to talk to you again.
Let me ask you a question based on our earlier conversations. It sounds like the drilling and fracking process put us at risk in two ways. One, from these undisclosed toxic chemicals that are used by the industry, but also from natural substances that are normally trapped in the earth and not released that are coming out of the ground, and some of those are toxic as well. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's accurate. And don't forget, we do know that some of the chemicals that they're introducing are not safe. Don't exclude them. But yes, and that's a big concern. And of course, the problem is that air quality monitoring is very difficult to do. It's very expensive. And the corporations are not doing continuous air quality monitoring from the time they start developing a pad, butting it, getting it ready for the drill rig, drilling, and then also through the fracking stage. I don't know anywhere where anyone has been able to do that. And this is what we need. We need some really background air quality monitoring. Now, EPA would love to do it, but of course, under the Clean Air Act moratorium, they cannot. And anyway, it would cost so much money, I don't think EPA could afford to do it.
We can't look to the federal government and the EPA any longer for protection and oversight that way. We're going to have to do it locally if it's going to be done.
That's right.
And so we have to get it at the county level.
That's right. And unfortunately, who at the county level? The counties are barely providing the infrastructure we need now. They're having to cut back. Air quality monitoring like this is totally out of the question.
What are the risks to us in terms of air quality, Theo?
The risks? Well, you're just constantly exposed. If you're near a well pad, you're exposed to all kinds of things, you know, around the clock. And also, if the air becomes still and stagnant, you'll be exposed to a particular chemical during that particular process or whatever's going on. It's totally unpredictable. But we know that these chemicals are there, and more, they're being picked up. But it's only a grab sample here and a grab sample there, which provides no real information and which you're not going to get a regulatory agency to move on.
Is there anything else you would suggest we do in here in Carbondale to protect ourselves?
Well, I think you need to get more and more people informed and somehow, some way, have something in your newspaper every week. Use your local newspapers. If you can get the local press, this is one of the big problems. Over the years, the control of the media. And it's amazing how many documentaries that I know have been made about endocrine disruption that were ready to even go on the network. And the same day they were supposed to go on the network, these would be hour-long documentaries. They were pulled by corporate headquarters. One day I would love to have a film festival of nothing but all the spiked documentaries done by the major network that have never been shown.
Wow.
It would really be interesting. Sit there all day. I measure my success by the enemies I make. I don't think they have any respect for me. Goodness.
Do they threaten you?
No, I'm usually treated very well. I was threatened early on and they backed down. They learned not to do that. It goes way back.
How did you grow such a thick skin, Theo?
Probably the way I was raised. I was always told that children are to be seen and not heard. Strict parents, mustn't speak out. I don't know what it is. All I know is that I don't worry about what people say about me because if I know what I'm doing is right, I have no problem with that.
Yeah, clarity is a great blessing in a time of confusion.
Yes, I think it is. And in Washington for years, my staff did not show me some of the things that ended up on the computer. Well, of course, with the internet growing and news spreading fast, I had staff who just couldn't stay away from that sort of thing. But they would never bother to show it to me. And I always said to them, we're not going to waste our time fighting back. I did only once, and that was when a number of the trade associations wrote a letter to everybody on the Hill, and that was every member of the House and every member of the Senate and all the committee chairs. I mean, you know, it was unbelievable. And it was a long letter telling what was wrong with me and the endocrine disruption research. And at that time, I was advised, and I did. I took that letter and broke it out sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, and responded, which gave me a wonderful opportunity then to get a letter back to every one of those people on the Hill who had already got one from the trade association. But that's the only time I've wasted any time on trying to defend myself. I'd rather spend the time doing the research that we like.
Yes, knowing what you're here to do is the guiding compass that we can live by.
I agree with you. Yeah,
very much. Have you always seen the big picture, Theo?
I think I always have. I don't know why. I can remember I couldn't have been more than 5 years old, and my grandmother and I were sitting out on the front lawn, sort of on a hillside by a huge lilac bush. We were on our backs looking up at the clouds. And we had wonderful talks about how everything was connected. It was really lovely. I can always remember that. I think it just comes from the love of being outdoors and appreciating. I was so lucky to have been raised in a rural part of northern New Jersey for a while. But I think it was that rural upbringing very early on. I was with the earth, truly with the earth, on a farm at first. I can remember feeding the chickens and doing all that sort of thing.
Well, seeing the big picture is not simply the present moment, but the effects of these toxic chemicals for many years down the line, and also at a multi-generational level.
Well, that's the big concern now, that we see that the chemicals not only alter how the cells form tissues, form buds, form ducts, form organs, but we know now that these chemicals can alter the genes that control all this activity. And not by getting in the gene, not altering the gene, but actually changing the chemical milieu in which the gene exists so that the gene, therefore, does not function properly. And consequently, and if this happens to the genes that are these germ cell genes that are passed through the father's sperm and the mother's ova, we are now seeing in the laboratory fourth generation effects as a result of four generations down, you're seeing effects that were the result of exposure to a chemical and that you would not even be able to predict or even think about. And that's what we're concerned about now, this going right for the gene and changing how genes behave. So even after you turn them on, they're not going to do the right thing. This is a big concern.
Well, it certainly reminds me of our first conversation when you talked about seeing what was happening to the higher predators and species around the Great Lakes who were unable to breed and care for their offspring.
Well, you know, there's an irony here because I never expected to start working in natural gas or doing anything with natural gas. But having worked with it, I soon discovered that better than, and oftentimes for some of the corporations, better than 50% of the natural gas they produce goes to making plastics, pesticides, pharmaceuticals, fabrics, and glass. Think about this. That gas that is coming up out of the ground is not going just to heat our home. It's producing the same chemicals that are undermining the ability of a species to perpetuate itself. There's an irony here, something about this. Every single endocrine-disrupting chemical that we have looked at so far came from a fossil fuel source, or could have, like coal burning, we get the toxic trace metals, cracking of crude oil to make gasoline. Those byproducts produced many, many products that we're using today, as well as natural gas. And from both of those sources, it's been benzene. Benzene has been the key to how to define and how these chemicals have been created. Certainly, we could say that benzene is the mother of endocrine disruption.
Wow.
And what has worried me is that no one has bothered to look at the economics of benzene. I've been wanting somebody to do that for a long time. Where does all that benzene go when it leaves those refineries? Follow the train and see where the benzene goes. Somebody needs to do that network. And then what comes out of that factory that benzene went into? Who made that chemical? Where did that chemical go? It's a huge network. It's all interconnected. This is why it is so important that we move forward with trying to reduce exposure to these kinds of chemicals, all of them a fossil fuel source.
Well, in many ways, Theo, awareness may be the first medicine. This reminds me so much of how the effects of tobacco and asbestos were concealed by the companies who profited from their use. And it feels like we're hearing the same story again. We're living it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Hooker Chemical and Love Canal, Theo.
Ooh, you're going way back. That's interesting. Hooker was producing a lot of chemicals and dumping their stuff there, which actually just, it's amazing. Yesterday, I ran across a new publication. Someone was able to follow some of the women who gave birth to children who lived at Love Canal. Finally, how many years later? And it's an epidemiological study. And I happen to know several of the people from when my early days when I started working around the Great Lakes. When was that? 87, 88, 89. Those people were trying to find out what are we going to do? How are we going to deal with Love Canal? Because what happened was there were so many settlements, and this is what's happening with natural gas today. The companies are settling with the people who have become ill. They give them enough money so they can move away, and they sign a gag order that they will never talk again.
Right.
And that's what happened with Love Canal. We lost Love Canal because of gag orders and settlements. The same thing is happening with natural gas. People are complaining now. Companies are going to them and they're paying, and they can't talk anymore about their problems. It's very, very serious. And that's the trouble with what happened with Love Canal. But fortunately, these persistent, wonderful health researchers who are working around the Great Lakes published this paper yesterday. And it definitely showed the boy babies were dying before they're born, so the sex ratio was shifted, and the boys are definitely being affected.
And how are they affected, Theo?
More birth defects. I can remember that one. Let me see. And what is interesting is that in Japan, where every baby that is born prematurely, whether it's an abortion, whether it's a miscarriage, the sex of that baby is documented. We don't do that in this country. And in Japan, they found that the boys are dying three times more frequently than the girls before they're born. Sex ratio in the population is shifting. And that's what they found in this population of people around Love Canal, of the children born of people around Love Canal.
So unless males wake up, we're going to lose our resilience and we'll leave the planet.
Well, yeah, we'll go with you.
This is William Evans. I'm speaking with Theo Colburn regarding the toxic effects of chemicals, especially those used locally in oil and gas extraction. Theo, if we were told to gain American energy independence, it's going to be necessary to make people ill, kill some, poison our land and life support systems for unknown lengths of time, I suspect the majority of us would not allow ourselves to be distracted by the confusion telling us we can't afford or we don't need renewable energy, clean renewable energy.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you wholeheartedly. If we could just convince people that this epidemic of endocrine disorders that we're seeing in the country today, where one in every third child born now is going to develop diabetes. One in 59 boys will have some form of autism. One in 25, about 25% of the children born, will have ADHD. The obesity problem, better than 50% of the population is obese. All of these are endocrine disorders of some kind or another. They are costing our country billions of dollars a year just to maintain these people. What we're doing is producing children whose odds of being born without one of these endocrine, the probability of a child being born today without one of these endocrine disorders is just zero.
So we're a land where powerful people are putting their wealth ahead of the health of all of us and all of our children for many generations to come.
That's right. And the problem is that these health costs, the cost of this health, is undermining our economic stability.
We wonder why medical care is so expensive.
That's right.
So
and it's
in
going
a
to increase. It isn't going to get better. The probability now of children living as long as we are is over with. Children are going to be living a much shorter lifespan than we are because they get these early onset of usual adult chronic disorders. This is a big problem. We're becoming a caretaker society where when a child is born, it's going to need medication for its entire life or it's going to need constant care. And we're going to run out of caretakers. We're facing a very serious situation. This leads to tremendous economic instability.
So do you work with Shauna Swan? Do you know her?
I know her very well. She's the one epidemiologist in the country that sees the big picture. There aren't many. Believe me, they want dead bodies. They're not helping us very much.
So Shauna's got clarity and still has clear, strong voice.
Very precise. Excellent. She's doing terrific work. She's got, for the phthalates, she has the evidence now because we have it in the wildlife, we have it in the mouse, we have it in the rat, and now she has it with her boys that she's been following. The evidence, based on the concentrations of these various phthalate monoesters, and it's in a dose-response manner. It's so beautiful. Anogenital distance, of course, is the most sensitive and first thing to do. So we've got the human evidence in the case of the phthalates, thanks to her work and her persistence and just pushing and pushing and pushing.
Yeah. Tell us what a phthalate is and where it comes from.
Well, the phthalates, over the years, they've been used to make plastics. They've been used in piping material to make basically make most of the plastics flexible. And, of course, you'll find them used as glues that are used excessively by construction material or people in construction and for construction material. There'd be exposure almost continually to them because so many of them have become a part of what provides our type of technology we have today. The phthalates came into use in the 30s and 40s when they were discovered how useful they were to make plastics flexible and soft and cuddly. They're in a lot of the products that are made for children to use and high-impact sporting goods type of things because they take a lot of banging and bumping into without hurting you.
And they're a fossil fuel-based product.
Oh, yes. They're derived probably mostly from natural gas and the byproducts of cracking crude oil. Yes. So, again, fossil-based chemical, of course. And but Shauna did was follow these breakdown products in the mother's urine throughout their pregnancy and then also followed them later on through their lives. But they have been able to show this significant relationship between what is called the anogenital distance, that's the distance between the anal opening and the base of the penis, and the size of the penis, and other organ changes that are more frequently found with these boys, like undescended testicles or hypospadias, but rather rare events, but still probability of finding these greater than it would in the normal population. They've been following the development of the boys, played more like girls, then More recent studies have shown that basically the boys seem to have some kind of impairment of intelligence, so they're not as bright as the girls. And this is really good, well done, well planned, well designed research. And this is one chemical in particular, this group of chemicals in particular, we know enough about now that we should be taking some kind of action to reduce exposure. Start figuring out how can we phase these out? What other kinds of chemicals could we possibly use? Or are we going to have to do without some of these products?
And there's legislation that's just been recently introduced by Senator Kerry that would begin to make some progress in controlling these substances.
Well, it's actually a bill that was also introduced in the House by Jim Moran from Virginia, in which they actually tell the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences in their National Toxicology Program to start collecting this kind of data, using this data, and also creating more studies, supporting more studies. But moving forward with information like this and setting up a panel that will determine, you know, the risk probability of, you know, how dangerous these chemicals are, and those chemicals of high concern, immediately the NIEHS should give that information to all of the regulatory agencies, not only EPA and FDA, but the Department of Agriculture, Consumer Product Safety Commission, et cetera. And consequently, and they, within 2 years, have to get back to Congress. They have to report to Congress on what they are doing about reducing exposure to those chemicals. The EPA, the FDA, and some of these other agencies, the opportunity to really step in and think about regulating.
So if listeners wanted to try and do something to support the success of this legislation, is there anything you would suggest?
Well, they should actually, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, should be calling their senators and their congressional members, the House of Representative members, and telling them to endorse this bill, to sign on with Kerry and with Moran in the House, do that, get their name on the bill, but also to fight for this bill when it comes on the floor so that this bill can move forward. And it isn't going to cost much money. It isn't like asking for billions of dollars. This is just a very first step, but a big step in making it possible for EPA to use evidence like work that Shauna has done that was not done in EPA laboratories or commercial laboratories, but by highly qualified academicians around the world. The evidence is there, and this will make it possible for those agencies to start doing something about it. The interesting thing is that the companies that are making these products will have 2 years also to report to EPA what they're going to do about those chemicals, how they're going to reduce production, how much they're going to cut back, what their plans are for substitutions and that sort of thing. So it puts a tremendous amount of pressure on those people who not only make the chemicals, but also the product manufacturers who take these chemicals from the chemical manufacturers and put them in their products, which then end up in our homes. Some of them actually can affect that part of the brain that allows us to become social, to be able to feel empathy, compassion, and understand the consequences of what we are doing, saying, and hearing. And my concern is, what's going on in Washington this week is a perfect example of the way society could be going. Look at what's happening in Washington, where no one will speak with anyone else. It's serious. It's very serious. I know I'm pushing the envelope when I say this, but there has to be an explanation. And it's time we turn the table and get these chemicals out of our economy, out of our environment, out of our homes especially, and out of the womb.
Theo, we're grateful for what you and your team are doing and this massive dose of education you're using to awaken people to what's being done to them. It feels extremely important to me because, you know, there are very few places left that still have clean air and clean water. And I'm concerned what blows over the ridge from the downriver Colorado drainage and comes over from Rifle. But relatively speaking, we're still pretty healthy, but it could go quickly if they come over Thompson Divide and start into our area and drainage.
Mm-hmm. Sure, it's something it's everyone's concerned, I'm sure, wherever this stuff is moving in.
Yeah, we have to draw the line, and there are communities that are blocking drilling, and New York State has got a hold on going into their watershed.
Well, the governor changed that a week ago. Didn't you hear that?
No.
No? Oh. Oh, no. He's saying it's okay now.
The governor of New York saying it's okay.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yes, be careful.
This is William Evans. I've been speaking with Theo Colburn. This is the third in a series of conversations about the risks we're exposed to from the chemicals, both used in the oil and gas extraction process and those substances released from the ground in the drilling process. Thank you so much, Theo.
Thank you, Will, for this opportunity.